Hello and welcome back to episode 26 of the Boxing Social Podcast in association with Betfred, with me, your host, Rob Tebbutt. As always, just before we get started, I'd just like to remind everybody to please follow, subscribe and turn those notifications on for more boxing content. Now that's out of the way, I am delighted to be joined by our esteemed guest this week, Mr. Barry Jones, former WBO super featherweight champion of the world slash gun for hire, and Declan Taylor, esteemed journalist, also gun for hire. It's like the job center today on the Boxing Social Podcast. But thanks for joining me.
It's the Who Needs Him Club.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us, guys. Not that you had anything else to do, but thank you very much, Barry. Nice to see you.
Yeah, nice to see you. Nice to see you as well. I'm sat like Declan.
And yeah, look, we're matching.
I'm really uncomfortable. Yeah. Really uncomfortable.
I could reach you.
What's that?
I could reach you from here. Come on.
Anyway, seriously, yes. Good, nice to be back.
A mirror image of each other. How are you, Deck?
Nice. I'm
to
not
see
too
you.
Bad. I'm a bit. I would have been better if you had done something on your intro there, which we spoke about before we started. You need a trademark. Yeah. You need a trademark.
Actually, that's probably your whole. No offense. Holds you back.
No, hang on, Barry. I'm the only one with a job out of us three.
No, but I think I would be better if you'd done something, and I could have gone. There's the Tebbutt that we know and love.
There's the Tebbutt.
So let this be the last one, episode 26. This is the last one.
You do need a gimmick though, because I know you've tried the silly hair, but that's not working.
Oh, I've got to do it while I can.
The dodgy lung is too ominous. You can't. That can't be your thing. You want to get beyond that, and then that. Okay, that's Rob Tebbutt.
Okay, I could just start him like gasping or like panting.
You can talk go wheezy guys or something like that. You know,
wheezy does it. Anyway, I've come back to your question. I'm great, mate. Good to see you. Thanks.
Yeah, good. Always good to have you on deck. Thanks very much for that. If anybody does have a gimmick they'd like me to trial for episode 27, please comment in the comment section. Now we've got past all of that. Before we talk about, of course, this weekend's undisputed super middleweight title fight between Canelo Alvarez and Caleb Plant, let's just go back to this past weekend. The Dillian White Otto Walling card that never was, of course, headlined by Chantel Cameron against Mary McGee. Barry, we'll start with you from the top and work our way down. Pretty convincing win for Chantel Cameron against Mary McGee.
Yeah, it was pretty much a shutout. That was relatively exciting, which is very rare, to be fair. Yep. I think she boxed well. I think Mary McGee could have boxed better. I think at the early round, she was using a jab, like a jab was nice and snappy, and then she stopped doing it that way. It was a weird thing. She was light on her toes, and whether because Chantel's pressure stopped that, but yeah, she wanted a trade, and it just never worked out for her. Because Chantel throws punches. What she does quite clever, Cameron, is she throws in flurries, like she's aggressive and tenacious, but then she'll take a little step back, and that threw McGee every time. She was fighting with her and enjoying and having a bit of success. As soon as Cameron took a little step back, she was lost. She didn't know what to do. And then once Cameron jumped back on her again, and then she had two or three punches before McGee, you know, was able to fire back.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I actually quite like watching Chantel Cameron. You can tell she really does love a scrap. And there were times in there where I felt like, while we were watching the fight, where, as you mentioned, just taking that little half step back, keeping the shots nice and straight, was giving her all the success she needed, but she still found herself having a bit of a trade-up at times and kind of allowing McGee some success in the fight that she didn't necessarily have to.
100%. I reckon she could have made that a much easier fight than that, but it wouldn't have been as entertaining. And I don't know whether she's not thinking that, but I think it's what you said. She loves a tear-up. And I do think, because McGee had spoken a lot in the week about she's just going to run around and just try and pot-shot me, I think it got in her head a little bit, Cameron. She was like, no, I'm not having that. I can trade with you, no problem. Because the narrative was kind of, McGee's the puncher in the fight, and if they really stand in the pocket and trade, then Cameron will get knocked out, and she just wanted to prove that wasn't the case. Very entertaining fight. Some of it was quite, you sort of looking through your fingers at times, you know, when they were both just head down, swinging wildly at each other. Makes me think she could have some very entertaining fights at the weight below and the weight above now. Obviously, she's going to unify, hopefully, first. But then the world's her oyster.
Yeah, I think it's obviously a positive that we ended up seeing a really entertaining fight. I mean, sometimes that's the criticism that's levelled at female boxing. There's not enough action sometimes. Obviously, we didn't get the knockout or the conclusive finish, but still an entertaining fight.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, even though it was only a clear winner, it was entertaining, and that's very rare. And it's I'm sort of fed up with saying women's boxing, they need this, women's boxing needs that. It's been wrong long enough now to stand on its own merits for criticism and praise. No, when they're in a bad fight, no, we should be able to say that's a bad fight. No, and things like that. No, I think they get to a stage now where there's enough good quality fighters there. There's a load of rubbish as well, but there's a load of rubbish in men's fights as well, fighters. But there's a load of good, there's a good enough group of women to say, let's judge it on its merits with the males. If it's a good fight, that was a good fight. That was a good fight if it was two men. That's, no, that's, I was going to say, that sounds sexist. Say, that's the highest compliment I could give it. I don't mean that, but I mean, no, it's, let's make it irrelevant now whether men or women. That's what I'm trying to say. It gets to a point. I'm not like, you know, full PC or anything, but I just think it's, you know, I'm fed up with going, oh, for women's boxing, this needs this and need that. I think they're there now. Or they're not there. If they're there now, they're never going to be there. That's what I feel.
I do think the two, for the first time, I've always been a massive, should be 3-minute rounds, just like men, should be three. For the first time, I thought that fight, it was so good and there were such good little pockets of action because it was 2-minute rounds, because they were obviously both thinking, well, we just got to get stuck into this. We can't afford to box away around the first minute and a half and then try and come on strong. It's just like, no, I'm just going to try and win this round from the outset.
You'll get more knockouts in 3-minute rounds.
Well, 100% more. Whether they're knockouts, there'll be some stoppages definitely on this. But I think you get more action. It's a bit like with amateur boxing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Especially with the 4-2s, when, you know, women boxing 4-2s, it's like, you can't waste any time. And it was the same with men's amateurs when they were 4-2s, or even when you're before your open class as an amateur, the pace is like that. And then when you get to 3-3s, you have to box a bit more.
4-2s is that, when the 4-2s in the Olympics was possibly the worst Olympics for me. I just thought it was literally just get the guy with the most athletic guy you can get with the longest arm.
100%. And they got more chance. He's been to land win. A few times.
And that's why Lomachenko stood out in, was it China?
Yeah, Beijing.
Lomachenko, and there was a, Dominican Republican? Was Felix Diaz or something like that? Was it something?
Yeah, and Crawford boxed him.
Yeah. They stood out because they boxed. They won. And like everyone else, like De Gale, might not have won a medal. I mean, he's a fantastic fighter. He might not have won a medal if it was 3-3s.
Yeah.
No, but I think because he's so athletic, no, I think the 4-2 suited him just because of his athleticism. He won about boxing skills. And I think that's sometimes with women, 2-minute rounds, it's about who's the most tenacious.
You can't afford to waste a second of it.
But I think the 3-minute rounds will, I know you'll have lulls and stuff like that, but I think overall it's about, boxing is not about the most skillful wins the fight, the biggest puncher wins the fight. It's about wrong management. And there's me, I'm a modern guy now. Wrong management and all that, foot placement. It's about that. It's about how you approach each round, and fatigue plays a massive
part.
It's
less of a sprint, isn't it? It's less
of course
a sprint.
It is. Yeah. Well, it's a marathon and a sprint.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of the sport. That's what makes it so difficult. And I think the women don't have that. They just, it's just a sprint for them. And you get people stand up like Savannah Marshall, who boxes at her own pace because 2-minute rounds, because she's so long, she can do everything and dictate it from her and doesn't have to rush her work because she's so tall and long for the weight. And 3-minute rounds, would someone be able to get close to her?
We're just going to try and skim through the rest of the card because we've naturally deviated as we always do. You mentioned a few minutes ago about a load of rubbish. Eric Molina was back in a British Boxing Board of Control ring, hopefully for the last time. I mean, what do you say about Eric Molina that hasn't already been said?
Was it 10 days notice he got?
I don't know.
So it wasn't a lot of notice.
No.
But I don't want to defend him or anything like that, but it's like, it was similar to the Wardley fight in that he probably had more success against Alan Babich than anyone else has had. Caught him with a couple of shots. Considering as well, and fair play to him, he got dropped heavy after 5 seconds on his knees. You don't often see people recover from, like, get up from that to beat a count. And then he was punching, like, really landed a couple of times. And Babich, for the first time, really, that I've seen him as a professional, had to, like, start using his jab a bit. And he was jabbing and stepping out, coming back. I was like, this is decent. I'm enjoying this. And then basically the same thing happened in the Wardley fight. The first side is the old complaining of the rabbit punch. And then he doesn't want to know then. And I mean, look, I wouldn't want to be in a ring with Alan Babich, so I'd probably do the same. But I'm not Eric Molina. I'm not. We get told this every time with Molina. He's fought for the world title twice. Look what he did with Wilder. Look, that's, he's done now, isn't he?
Yeah,
he can't. He doesn't fancy it anymore.
He's surely got to be done.
That's fair enough. If you don't fancy it anymore, fine. But don't try and peddle him as an a suitable opponent in these fights.
And we've seen it now. We the Hrgović fight, he boxed on the Joshua Ruiz yeah. 2 undercard, and it was the same for that. Every time Hrgović landed anything to kind of the top to the side of the head, it was complaints to the ref and then down on the deck. And somebody actually made a really good point after the fight on Saturday that he was taking better shots than what was dropping him
yeah.
when it as the fight was going on. The first shot that did catch him after 5 yeah. seconds was a good shot and it caught him flush. But then after that, he was taking a couple of full-blooded shots from Babich. Then a couple of ones that kind of skimmed him and grazed him. He was
that's
halfway
like
onto
when
the
he
floor.
Thought about it.
But yeah. I would say, though, enough defending him because he was awful. When you were talking then, I fell asleep. But that can happen, though. Sometimes you know, it's not always the harder shot that knocks you over. I know that from personal experience. I've taken some great shots and gone, boah, and on my feet. And then a shot that I haven't felt, I've been on the floor. But he was against the ropes looking. He was almost going, come on, hit me clean and I'll fall over. Come on, hit me clean. And then we didn't. Then because Babich is so crude, not even looking at the tag, he's looking at the floor when he swings his arms everywhere. He's gone, oh, I've got to throw back then, though. No. I think that's when he had success, when he think, oh, I better throw back.
Well, that's it. That's
so Molina came, I suppose, he thought, I can't. He came to lose. I mean, he came to fall over. Without a doubt, he came to fall over. And he looked in pockets like because Babich is so crude and awkward and easy to hit, then he's had to hit him. And you know, he stunned him a couple of times, but certainly the once. But he was never going to try and win that fight. And he wanted, and if he would have won, it would have been by accident. That's the truth. It would have been. And I think he's a good opponent to have in your name. Heavyweight, you promote the heavyweight different to any other. But that shouldn't be on the TV segment. That's the biggest issue now. Yeah. Now we have to pay for it everywhere. And we should have more, and we have a more say on what goes on TV, I hope, or we have more of a voice to complain, and more platforms to complain, like this one, then I do think then that shouldn't be on TV.
No, I agree.
I'm not saying it's a good fight for Babich to have, to build up his experience.
Is it anymore, though?
But we shouldn't have. Well,
do you think so?
What are you going to do with Babich? Where'd you go? See, with Babich, we talk with Johnny Fisher, I know you're going to talk about it, but Johnny Fisher, like, you build him like a 90s heavyweight. He's not going to have 25 fights before he fights anyone, but you build him like because he's got potential, possibly. Time will tell. And not just the tickets, just potential because of his size, and I think he got decent skills. But Babich hasn't got that. He's a fun fighter, so you're going to match him differently with fights that are going to be fun, fights he's going to win, but ultimately he's going to step up. And you know, and who knows? I can't. You know, you're always trying to sell a narrative that, you know, he's so impossible to deter, but he hasn't boxed anyone of any. No, they're not talking about Dave Allen. That's another fight that's going to be, you know, Dave Allen a few years ago would maybe, you know, toy with him, possibly. No, because what happens when he gets there by a proper heavyweight and knows how to just take a little step back?
He might go over.
He might.
But then
might
a lot of heavyweights do.
Yeah.
So I think I'm a big, I'm a shameless Alan Babich fan. You know what you're saying about the TV? I totally agree with you. But when I was watching that card, and I'm the same as everyone else, and you shouldn't admit this really, as a, you know, this is what casuals say, but you're excited to watch Alan Babich.
Yeah, for sure.
100%. And especially if you gamble, you're excited to watch Alan Babich.
What I'm saying,
there's money to be made.
You're putting him with a guy who's not very good, but will come to win.
Yeah.
So
I'll tell you what, Niall Kennedy came to win, and it was,
yes,
and he got that. Knocked out in the end, and he got stopped.
And what's the other kid?
Mark Bennett.
Who else did he box?
Tom Little came in at like what, 12 and a half
stone. They had a little pop, and none of those fighters are fans of great, nothing like that. But the thing is, they had a go. So you don't mind that.
Yeah.
No, because again with Babich, I think he's not even a heavyweight really, is he? So and he's fun to watch. And you put him on first fight. That's what I would do. But you know, against someone like Molina, that's just a waste of time. And you know it. You know when you made that match, you know exactly where you're getting.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
That's the difference. It's not like, oh, he didn't turn up today. He haven't turned up since Wilder. Mm. No, that's the truth of it. No, he's been awful, like awful rubbish.
I did feel like, because in the Fabio Wardley fight, I mean, I think part of that was Fabio Wardley kind of allowed him to be comfortable in the fight, certainly in those early rounds. He kind of was able to old man Fabio Wardley at certain parts of it and kind of show the inexperienced levels of Fabio Wardley. But he just didn't really seem...
And he seemed to swallow it.
Yeah, he just really... Well, he did in that fight, and then obviously he did against Babich, but there wasn't even really part of that early... I guess there wasn't really much time, and got knocked down in the first 5 seconds, but he didn't really seem like he came to give Babich any kind of test. Like, he really kind of looked like he did in those early rounds against Wardley.
I think maybe it's because of Babich's style, though. And that's the interesting thing, is because, yeah, he'll get stepped up. And like you say, eventually there'll be someone who hits him hard and he goes over. But he's never going to give anyone time to settle.
Mm.
Anyone. Put him in with anyone. And this, I rate him for doing heavyweight. I rate him for doing heavyweight because he could be a cruiserweight.
Yes.
But I think that...
Well, because he's an extra note, it puts an extra zero on your purse. That's why if you were heavyweight.
Yeah, but he's going to steam in to everyone.
Oh, yes.
Doesn't matter definitely. Who it is. No, but, and I'm not saying he'll have success against everyone, but he's going to steam into everyone, no matter who it is. And in the end, someone's going to chin him.
Well, what's going to happen is, I do understand what you're saying. He won't give anyone time to settle.
No.
But someone with a really good, solid jab, like Joshua,
Hargovich is the fight that he's been calling
for. Once he gets hit with a solid time jab and it goes, bam!
Yeah.
He doesn't walk forward then.
No, of course.
I mean, he does come back again because I think he's that way inclined. But I mean, that stops you in the track and then you got to start thinking. And because he doesn't use his brain, he'll gas out. Usyk again. I haven't talked about him since I've heard last time. Usyk does it. He makes you think more than you want to. And that tires you out. And so once you get hit with a big shot, you have to think of what you're doing. And at the moment, Babbage, he's on autopilot.
Yeah.
He just trains hard, hard, hard. And I enjoy him, by the way.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about, they're promoting him like a prospect. So that's treating him like a prospect. He needs to hone more of his skills and he needs to start using his brain more and start moving around the target when he's getting in close. Because once he gets to a level with a guy with a solid jab, he won't get past it.
Tell you, Dave Allen's got a solid jab. And I think who knows what Dave Allen is like now. He's not the Dave Allen of old. Solid jab, cute defensively. If it's a fit and healthy Dave Allen, it's a good fight. It's a good fight. And I think he offers far more than Eric Molina did at the weekend.
He does, but he does. Of course he does. Yeah, he'll have a go, I'm sure he will. I'm not sure I want to see Dave Allen fight again. That's the truth of it. I don't want to slag him off. I don't know him. I'm not slagging him off personally, but I think he's had a hard career for a young man. And what's for what? For a few quid, he's not going to earn fortunes. He might earn some decent money, but it's not going to be fortunes. I don't see what the risk and reward is for him. What do I know? I don't live his life. I don't know what he needs to live his life and keep be happy and all the rest of it. But it's what the cost is after for him. That's my worry. And I think, that would be a war.
Yeah.
For however long it lasts, it would be a war. Do I want to see Dave Allen in another war? I don't know. And even Dave Allen at his best. No, how good was he? Let's be honest, he was good. He was good to watch and he had a bit, he got lovely skills actually, but too small to be a heavyweight. Another one who's too small to be a heavyweight. He's a bridger weight. Though I hate that weight division. Everyone's bridger weight. They all get tattoos saying idiot on their forehead. He wasn't big enough to be a heavyweight. And that was always against him. But against Babbage, he'd find someone his size and it would be good. It would be entertaining to watch, but it's one of those ones where, we become the problem watching that.
Yeah, it's true.
No, that's the truth. There you go.
Very profound from you, that.
Yeah, no, I don't want to slag. I don't want to be like I'm like.
I agree with what you've said.
I know he's your mate.
But we had.
And he'll put me in his pocket as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, good luck bumping into him. but no, we had Dave. Obviously, Dave does the podcast with us and kind of as and when we can get him on. And we did a podcast with Michael Watson. Shortly after David announced his retirement, and there was some story shared between them that go back and watch. I think it was episode 5 or something. I think there's enough alarm bells in that interview to make me inclined to agree with you, Mr. Jones. But anyway, staying with the heavyweights, we mentioned him briefly earlier. Johnny Fisher, selling tickets and knocking out Spaniards and what have you. Yeah. What did you make of Johnny Fisher? Still very young, very raw, but still a lot to like about
him. I'm not surprised he's selling tickets because what a salt of the earth fella. And you look at the big ticket sellers in Britain over the last 20 years, Ricky Hatton and Josh Warrington, basically. Two down to earth, humble guys that everyone has got a story about them. Everyone knows in person, knows a family member, knows this, knows that. And you can see that he's harnessed that. And that on its own is enough to keep you relevant. And the fact is he can fight as well. He's a big, big fella. He sounds like he's coachable. When you listen to the tips is there, he listens to what he's being told and he goes and does it. And that's a good win.
I like the way the tips train. Yeah. I don't know why they haven't trained heavyweights all the time, actually, because I think the way they train is very old-fashioned. And it's similar to Shane McGuigan, actually. I think I don't know how they train exactly, but it feels like that's the way. They like to keep their shape. so they had to keep their shoulders square. And so that's why I think Okoli's good with Shane McGregor. And I think Matt Tibbs and obviously Jimmy Tibbs, I think they should have been experts in training heavyweights because they like it. Hands high, elbows tucked in tight, you know, shoulders square, turn direct. And that's all you need as a heavyweight. If you can throw a 1-2 left hook as a heavyweight, you're world class. That's the truth. If you can throw one of them, if you can do fast and solid and safe when you do it, you're almost world class, let's be honest. And that's all you need because you're big guys. You know, the basics are so important. You've seen all the best heavyweights, except for Tyson Fury, just did the basics brilliantly. That's the truth of it, isn't it? Let's be honest. And I think, you know, with him being with them, you'll do that. You'll be high. You know, they'll be hands high. You'll make sure you'll get the rotation on the right hand. They'll be straight shots more than anything else. It won't be all this flash stuff too much. It'll be more of that. And you've got your own style, so you're going to do your own thing. But and you find your own little, you know, your own little like magic to that. But they'll give him a real good basis to move forward. So I'm quite excited about him.
Same.
Those tickets that he sold, I think, depend on what you listen to. 1,200, 1,400 tickets. I think it got more and more the longer the week went on. That help or a hindrance at this stage of his career? He's got to help him, I would think. Certainly helps him get on cars, but with regards to matching him.
Not matching him. Well, for the promoter, because you got to pay more money. Worth imagine. But I mean, there's always a worry. I say that about debutants, that it's a worry that even though you've been a good amateur, maybe, or most of the time, and you've had loads of success and you've learned loads, but being a professional, it's almost like starting again. You sell tickets and sometimes the over-eagerness, so the more tickets you sell, the bigger the noise of the crowd, the more you want to impress and you end up being in sometimes with a scrappy fight. Also, I say about keeping your composure and, you know, your shape and, you know, taking your time and just remember doing like the basic things sometimes, you know, so you warm into the fight. And yeah, so I think, but I think he's, you know, by the looks of it, he's used to having a crowd. And once you're used to having a crowd, no, I don't think it won't affect him, no. But I think for the matchmaker, except for having to pay a few more quid, it's great, isn't it? You know, you can put him on anywhere in the bill. That's the truth of it. I've got to say, like defer a little bit. There was on Friday night in the York Hall, a young kid at his debut called Joe Giles from Essex, ironically, and I think he pretty much sold the York Hall by himself. So he was a floater. Now, if anyone don't know what a floater is, it's you're on the, you have an opponent who you don't have a slot on the bill, so you're just hanging around hoping it's an early stoppage, you can fit in somewhere. So you can be, with a bit of luck, you can be on just before the main fight, or you're on last. But they've put him on last on purpose because to keep the crowd there. Yeah. And they all stayed. And it was the loudest the York Hall was on the last fight of the night. After the two 10-rounders we had, which were decent fights. One of them was a really good fight. And he sold so many tickets. And I remember saying on the night on commentary, any promoter in the country, in the world, would want him, regardless how good he is. And he's not a bad kid. Because he sells so many tickets. And the same with him and Johnny Fisher together, unless they all they're too close together, they don't need anyone else on the bill. Because a lot of people can't sell tickets. Joe Calzaghe couldn't sell a ticket. He was TV. He was all, and Warren knew that. He was always going to be the TV star. So in the end, it's irrelevant in the end, because you know you're going to be the star and stadium fights will come. But building up, you know, he couldn't sell a ticket. So, like, you know, they put me on after him once because I could sell tickets. And he couldn't sell any. He was just because he lived in a small little town. He didn't know anyone. And that's how it is. So I tell people how important it is to sell tickets and that personal touch that Warrington had. You have to go to pubs. Social media is great, but you have to go to pubs. Can I leave 10 tickets on a poster? Go to barbers. Yes, I used to have hair. And 10 tickets on a poster. Post office, news agents, butchers, everywhere. Everyone's your area. And then you go back and then most of them don't sell any tickets. And pubs sell more than anything else. When pubs used to exist. And then you say thank you. If they don't sell a ticket, you say thank you. And that's the most important bit. Because the next time you leave a poster and tickets there, they'll buy one and not even turn up. But that starts the ball rolling. And you keep doing that over your career. And in the end, like I did, you sell a lot of tickets. And like Josh Warren did, went crazy. He's probably, you know, he's probably the biggest one for doing it as a personal touch still. And that's and Johnny Fisher. You know, they feel a connection with you. They're there with you. They're your mates. They're not your fans. They're your mates. That's the difference. And then they're your mates, and they all feel like a part. It's a movement. It's a movement. It's a cult.
Yeah. Whatever the number was, you said that it seemed to go up and up. Whatever the number actually was, you could add another 200-300 for the next fight.
Yeah, definitely.
And then it would be another two because people hear about it. People see their mates on Instagram and go, "Oh, I want a bit of that next time." You're like, oh, I know Johnny Fisher. He's got people in Exeter Unit. Before you know it, like you say, it's just like this and this and it never stops. And even if he loses.
As long as you don't get too big.
Yeah.
If people go, Johnny, and he goes, oh, yeah, that means everything.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I think he will.
Yeah, he seems like that type of guy.
He seems like a proper nice bloke. And Josh Warrington is the same and Ricky Hatton is the same. It's not false. That's just how they are. And in the end, people respond to that.
The only difference will be between him and most others. I don't think he's attached to a football club. I know, like, I was attached to Cardiff City.
Yeah.
And my brother was a football...
No, he's not.
Supporter. And then, and obviously Warrington with Leeds and all that. So other fighters do it after.
Big Man City.
But other fighters try to do it, but they've done it too late in their career. And then they don't. The fans don't buy into it because I've never seen it on the Cardiff City ever in your life. Joe tried it once he boxed Hopkins. It was too late by that point. Better off being a Swansea fan. It's true, isn't it? But like, I think Johnny Fisher and Joe Giles, there's no football element there. And which is crazy that they sell that many tickets just out of that personal touch.
Just from his dad's TikTok following.
He said he did 30 tickets on the day.
Yeah.
He
said he could have done 100 tickets.
He's counting them as well. Like that, it just says it all.
Well, his dad was kind of spearheading the tickets and the ticket sales and stuff like that. He had I think he had a TikTok video that did 1 million views or something of him eating a Chinese because he's a sizable chap.
Oh, so everything I said was a load of rubbish then, because he's using social media to sell tickets.
Well, I don't know if this is necessary. I don't know how many of those million viewers.
He's rubbish, like Johnny Fisher. I wouldn't watch him.
I'm guessing I already know the answer to this. I'm going to ask it anyway. But too early to be discussing, what next for Johnny Fisher. He needs to kind of really get some rounds under his belt. And just time in the ring at this point of his career is the most important.
100%. And the thing is, there are a lot... Because people don't expect too much of him. And I think people expect quite a lot of Babich. And like you said, he is really a prospect. But people expect, who's he going to fight? You need someone to do this and do that. With Fisher, there's none of that. It's just like, there's so many heavyweights that we've seen over here in the past that have boxed, even boxed Chisora and then gone on to box Joshua and all that. Like, there's so many of them knocking about. And there's also quite clear levels to them. I don't think we need to talk about that at all. How old is he?
He's young, yeah.
Mid-20s or something.
Difference with Babbage.
He's younger than that.
Yeah.
Difference with Babbage. Babbage is selling an image of this savage.
Precisely.
And he's great. He's a great interview. Yeah.
And there's none of that with Fisher.
Ultimately, heavyweights don't really need to do that. I think more now than ever before, but they don't need to do that because heavyweights sell anyway. And if it's fairly rare now that people use that nice guy image. Steve Robinson had it. He was like the boy next door in Cardiff. The boy next door. And we loved him. And he used to sell out the ice rink in Cardiff. Every time he boxed, he was packed. There were tickets were gone like that, straight away. But he was a quiet man. He wouldn't say boo to a goose. I mean, he was a tough man, but he couldn't sell a ticket, really, for all his career. Couldn't sell a ticket. When he won the world title, his world blew up. But he's still the same Steve Robinson that everyone knew from a kid. And that's why everyone loved him. So certain areas fall in love with that. Other areas, not so much. But once you start having a persona like Babbage has, then that's polarising. Mm. But Johnny Fisher, he's not looking for that. He's not going for that angle.
No, and I think Eddie Hearn said it right in his interview after. He said, we're going to have a lot of fun with him over the next few years. And I think it doesn't really matter where he gets to, what level he gets to, because he will. With all those fans there, and whether he ends up boxing for British titles or whatever it might be, it doesn't really matter, because the fans that are going to be there are going to be connected to the whole thing. Who knows? He might go further than that. But he's doing everything right now, though.
Yeah.
But like I said, I think you promote him like you do the 90s heavyweight and just feed him as many, not too easy fights, but learning fights as possible. Get him out there, get him used to the cameras and the lights and the interviews, and just do that. The problem with social media is there's loads of criticism straight away. I'm contradicting myself here because it's not good enough. I don't want that for Babbage, but I want it for Johnny Fisher. Do you know what I mean? I do
feel they're different, though. What you said there.
Yeah, but Babbage is selling himself in a different light. Exactly. So, he's putting himself out there, but Johnny's not. If he just stays like he is, I'm just learning my trade, I'm dedicated to my craft, all that crap. I mean, all that good stuff. And then, but it's true, isn't it? And then he gets a chance to learn and develop. And then I kind of think for the heavyweight, you learn and develop, and then when you get there, you're ready. That's the eagerness not to push a fighter too soon. It will ruin careers. That's the worry. And some fighters it suits. Some others it kills them. It kills their career. That's it stops it before it even gets any sort of momentum, which is another new popular word that I like to use. Momentum.
Johnny Fisher versus Eric Molina at some point. It's bound to happen.
It's a big learning fight.
It's bound to happen at some point. Okay, and moving on to the rest of the card. Craig Richards returned. What are you laughing at, Dick?
I love Craig Richards.
Yeah, you do love Craig
Richards.
I was
looking forward to this bit.
Yeah, we've done it twice, but anyway. Craig Richards.
I don't like him. You talk about him. I'm enjoying
it. Craig Richards made his return after, you know, giving a really good account of himself against Dmitry Bivol. A lot of people, myself included, expect that to be quite a one-sided fight. It wasn't. He gave a very good account of himself and then got the stoppage in the end, albeit after a probably slightly circumspect start at the weekend.
Yeah, it was. He didn't have it all his own way. And I thought he would, and then, but he pulled the stoppage out. It wasn't like he was behind or, you know, in any real trouble. But yeah, I love Craig Richards. I've written him off a few times. I fancied Chakan Peters in that fight, for instance, and he won that in style. I think if you look at his record, what is he like, 17-2 or something like that, with a draw in there as well. Mm. He's one of those guys where he's sort of done it the hard way. And I was thinking about this. I was thinking about Craig Richards. He's always been with Matchroom. Has had this long sort of association with Matchroom. So it's actually hard, or it's probably incorrect to say that he's underappreciated or underrated or anything like that, because he's kind of not, because he's always sort of had the platform. But it feels like he's had to do everything kind of the hard way.
He's been with the right people with the platform, but he hasn't really had the...
No.
Mm. He hasn't been pushed in.
So that bully only fight on short
That was a real... And I really rated him for that, and he did all right. It was a Joshua card or something. It was in Cardiff, I think.
Yeah,
it was.
Remember.
He took up 9 days notice.
Yeah. Like, but, you know, I think the things with that division... I seem to moan about the division a lot because there's so many good fights you want to see in there. So many, even just in Britain.
Yeah.
And they sort of don't happen. We've seen a couple of them, but I would love to see them against Callum.
Most of them are begging for fights, by the way.
And this is the thing that annoys me.
Not as if they all got, that all our pastors, they're all like, you know, we're all already know where we're going. No, like Callum Johnson's just hanging around, isn't he?
Yeah.
Bless him, like begging for work. Like, please, can I fight?
Yeah. There's more. There's Buatsi. I mean, you only have to listen to the interview after. There's Buatsi. There's even in the stable, Callum Smith. You know, there's so many great fights for Craig Richards. But, you know, that was one of those ones where he's expected to win. And he's won tidily. And fair play to him. But now I just want to... There's so many fights. And the thing is with Richards... So
Jose Burton Dan Aziz is coming up now, isn't it? Soon. And there's whatever level you're looking at.
He's in that division where I'd like... And you say, look at him against Bivol. He didn't... There was no disgrace there, no shame in losing. He's great. You know, he did a really good account of himself. I'd see him against any of them. And I love... He's such a good fella, and you can tell he's got fans and his family behind him. Fair play to him. I just want to see him in one of those...
Has he beat any of them, though?
I don't know, because
you're obviously in love with him. So
the jury's still out on
to ask.
The thing is, the jury's still out on people like Buatsi. I think, you know, because I was really hot on Buatsi because I thought out of everyone he would be the one that emerged, and he might still, but he's had a few little hiccups there. And someone like Craig Richards is the sort of person who would at least really push him and really could beat him. Callum Johnson, could he handle the power? Handle Bivol's power? There's so you know.
Callum Johnson's easier to hit now than he's ever been.
Yeah,
I'm not saying you can hurt him, but I mean this shit. Well, you can.
It'd be a great fight. Emil Markić.
Yeah.
But you can see Callum Johnson now at this stage. Now that maybe he needs to be more active because he's not as active enough to be outboxed. You know, if you're willing to box like I did, run away and just do enough for every round and not care about what people think about you, and not look to try and stop him, you could, because he's not active enough to get that ring generalship back. It's a struggle. You need to be fighting all the time to get used to your placement in the ring.
I think after he'd boxed Emil Markić, I think he'd boxed 10 rounds or less than 10 rounds in 5 years. Yeah, Callum great. Johnson.
I boxed more regularly than Callum Johnson. I had my last fight 21 years ago.
But there's you know, you even saw it in the Jake Bull fight. He can box a bit, but when he needs to, he can punch and he can finish people. I think he's a real player in there. I'm not sure if he's the best in Britain, like they sort of claim. Like, you know, whoever wins is therefore the best in Britain. I wouldn't claim that, but I think he's in the mix, and I think he's in good fights every time.
The problem that I think we've got domestically, 175 pounds, and I know obviously Callum Smith is now 175 pounds, but coming off the back of his career at 168, it's probably maybe slightly harsh on to kind of band him in with the rest of those guys. I think, but those other guys, your Buatsis, your Callum Johnsons, your Craig Richards, people like that, you kind of saw it in the post-fight interview at the weekend where you had Eddie talking about, you know, he wants a world title, but if not, then maybe you'll have to fight these domestic fights. And what I thought was great was Peter Sims was on the camera, and he was like, well, maybe it's Joshua Buatsi, and he was going, he's like, well, maybe it's Joe Smith, and he was going,
yeah.
So you've got all of those guys, and everybody's looking up, like the winner of Yard versus Arthur 2 is not going to be going, oh, well, I'll have another domestic fight after that. They all want the world title fight. So you're everybody. It's almost going to take somebody to go up, kind of like what Craig Richards did, go up, lose a world title fight, come back down and then fight somebody else. But it doesn't look like we're very close to any of those domestic fights happening at light heavyweight.
No, it's because these organizations give you ratings based on you winning. I'm a product of it. So, winning intercontinental international titles and then getting a rating way above you. Winning one of those international, intercontinental, European, global, whatever they're called, winning one of those titles should elevate you a little bit further up. But not to number three in the world. Like, what the fuck? You know, what the, come on, like. In number three, obviously, you beat like a relatively not a decent fighter, but not a great fighter, and you get number three. And you look at the names below you and you go, whew, I'm not fighting any of those, they're too good. But I'll fight for the world title, because it doesn't matter, it's a world title. But it's like, so domestically, no. But again, you understand it. Why would they want to fight there? I'll win the world title, then I'll fight them. And I understand, you know, why I would think the same way. But the sport shouldn't be like that. You know, they should have to fight each other, really, to get the chance. Like, Yad did, you know, okay against Kovalev, but he lost convincingly. He had a great round, and he was trying to be competitive in all the rounds. But he lost convincingly, and that's just a fact. And now we're talking straight away that he's world class now, straight away. Callum Johnson, though he hurt Beterbiev, and he did great, but he lost convincingly. These are just facts. I'm not trying to say that. These are just facts. Lost convincingly. If anything, Richards have had been closer to winning the world title than them two, and we don't even put him anywhere near them two. If we were rating who was the best, so why should they automatically get a world title shot? Because one's if except for that one round, Yad was never in the races. Except for Callum Johnson knocking Beterbiev down, he was never really in the races. So why should they get world title fights? They should they should go back down and stay here for a while until they fight someone who's Yad beating Arthur. Why is that? How can that be an eliminator for a world title? Because Arthur's a good fighter, but what has he shown at any decent world level? How good he is? Yeah. He might be the next best thing. I don't know, but I mean, he hasn't proved that yet. And by beating Yad doesn't prove that. Beating Yad again still doesn't prove that, because Yad hasn't, except for one round, hasn't done anything at world level. Mm. That's just the facts.
Eddie was alluding to that though, wasn't he, in that interview where he's basically saying everyone wants a world title. Mm. Thing is, it seems there is a reticence to chuck them in together. And who would you rather see Callum Smith fight? Lennon Castillo or Craig Richards, for instance?
Oh, Craig Richards.
Every time, as a boxing fan, British boxing fan, every time I'd rather see that. But
you don't want to lose against a British guy, that's the problem.
No. And it's probably more expensive, isn't it? It's more expensive to put those two together than get someone like Lennon Castillo over.
But also, it's a more marketable fight that will bring in a bigger audience, you would feel. Yeah. Maybe. That I certainly would for me.
Yeah.
I'd be more interested in watching. I didn't care about Callum Smith boxing Castillo, to be honest. It was a decent little fight on paper, but I didn't. It wasn't like poof. But then, if he's boxing Callum Johnson, you go, ooh, stablemates. Are they still stablemates? Ex-stablemates now?
Ex-stablemates.
Yeah, and also, Johnson can bang. It's his first fight at light heavyweight. Callum Smith obviously got all the pedigree. But so Johnson as an amateur as well, and he'd look good. So it's a good fight, isn't it? And that's a fight that I'd be more interested in watching than any other, possibly.
100%.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, moving on to this weekend. Obviously, we've just spoke about this last weekend. Canelo Alvarez versus Caleb Plant. All the marbles at super middleweight. Barry, we've discussed this a few weeks ago. Yeah. So, Deck, we're going to come to you first. Giving Caleb Plant much chance, any chance of pulling the upset and defeating Canelo Alvarez?
No. Probably less than Billy Joe Saunders for me. I think based on what he did to Saunders as well, similar boxers, Plant and Saunders in the way that they operate, not massive punches, slick and whatever else. If before the Saunders fight you'd asked me who's had a better chance of winning, I would have always said Saunders. I think Canelo is just this, there's no disrespect to Caleb Plant, it's just Canelo is excellent, isn't he? I don't see how he loses this fight. I think he's on a roll. Momentum is all with him. He's got the tools to win. It's not like the jury's out on how he boxes, how he deals with boxers anymore or whatever, the Lara thing that came up before the Saunders fight. I feel like it's been a bit of a masterclass in how to promote yourself into making people think you've got a chance, because all of that stuff at the presser, you watch it and you think, oh, this is an even fight. It's not an even fight for me at all. And I think that all of that stuff, the histrionics and the pushing and the little melee and him trying to really get under Canelo's skin, I think it's not a close enough fight for that to have any effect whatsoever on the fight. If anything, I think it's going to make it's going to fire up Canelo even more.
Yeah, he didn't look very happy at the press conference.
No,
yeah.
He's fuming, and that whole thing probably can't swear, but call him an MF-er, and he doesn't quite seem to know
what's an MF-er?
He thinks
just behave yourself. You can't take getting demonetized. Yeah, we don't want to demonetize Barry Jones videos,
especially with his fee. Can't get demonetized for this. But Canelo genuinely thinks it's a literal term, so he's fuming.
Although he didn't think it was a literal term when he said it to Demetrius Andrade.
Maybe he did.
Right,
but I love nasty Canelo.
I love English speaking Canelo. Yeah, it's brilliant. He's got the best like English speaking accent that's going. It's brilliant.
Yeah. I know when Plant did that, you just kept thinking, why would you poke the bear?
Yeah.
Why
would you do that? Like,
if anything, befriend him. Him. Sal, my friend. Sal, come here. I got some cake for you after the weigh-in.
I totally agree. And I think that it's the wrong thing to do. Sometimes it's the right thing to do. He's done it wrong.
But you can understand that Plant's full of confidence.
Yeah.
He's a world champion. He's boxed well. He looks good. He's got a good style. Fast hands. He's tricky. He's awkward. Billy Joe. But I've seen this talking yesterday about Canelo, and I said, like, the evolution of that kid.
Yeah,
it's been unbelievable.
It's just something else. And I've been saying for a long time, he takes lessons, whether he's won or lost, like Canelo, he took more lessons from the loss. The Floyd Mayweather fight was the most important fight of his career, as it goes. That's where the evolution started, right there. And you just, because he could get buzzed before that fight, by the way. But then,
There's a Cotto one, wasn't it?
Really, Cotto's brother, wasn't it? But from that fight on, he's taken lessons from every fight and took him to the next one and made him better. He's like you take your strengths off you. It's like a top trump, isn't he? Take you, and then he'd have yours, he'd move on to the next one. But he hasn't done that for the last few fights. He hasn't taken any lessons from the last three or four fights, past two or three fights, but definitely, and took him into the next one. Because he didn't have to know.
No.
He's there. I think I said something like, he's completed boxing. He's done it. Mm. Like, he's the master of it now. He's like, he's done it all. And he's no more lessons for him to learn.
And even when you look back at it, I mean, people will always talk about the Arislandi Lara fight, obviously a long time ago. He's boxed tricky, awkward guy since then. Austin Trout.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a close fight. But anyway, it's kind of like several versions of Canelo ago.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like he's now, like, one of the criticisms always have been of Canelo, which we saw in particularly the Lara fight, less so in the Mayweather fight, but at times, is his inability to cut the ring off at times. And even in the Amir Khan fight, he kind of, followed Khan, but obviously a different type of fight. I think he kind of felt like everybody. Kind of knew that once he got into range, once he landed the shot, what happened was going to happen. But I feel like in the Saunders fight, he was pretty much on Saunders from the first round. He came out, he cut the ring off, and he was actually able to get his feet in position to land his shots and make Billy Joe Saunders work quicker than he potentially would have years and years ago. So he has, in my opinion, he's become kind of, I don't really see the weaknesses in him now.
No, you can look, sometimes he gets caught, but he doesn't care.
No, he's okay
with
it.
Saunders, he almost makes you look like they're in the fight. Like Saunders, he's doing quite well. He's doing well here, Billy, isn't he? He's doing well. He's maybe win that round. Maybe won that round. There was never 1 minute, 1 second that you thought he was going to win the fight, though. That's the difference. You almost feel, even though you don't know what Canelo's doing, you sort of feel like he's letting you do what you want. Not like Usyk. I mentioned him. Have I mentioned him already today? He makes you work hard with the feet. Yeah. It's a similar sort of thing. They don't mind you keep carry on doing all that, because what you're doing, though, it's not really making an effect. But I'm just testing you, prodding you, and then whack.
I felt like we saw that in the Kovalev fight. The Kovalev fight, I actually had Kovalev ahead at the time of the stoppage. But again, for some reason, I still felt like he was going to get to him eventually. Yeah,
I'm the same. When you
like 10, 11 rounds in, you're thinking, yeah, no worries. He's going to chin him in a second. Yeah. He's got 4.5 minutes to do it. Canelo's just kind of mastered the art of being a 12-round fighter now. He knows how long he's got to get you. Even the Callum Smith fight, obviously didn't get the stoppage in that, but what you like to talk about, getting that front foot in between and making him work without really doing much. And obviously Canelo's got really good upper body movement, and kind of he's kind of on you before you know it. I mean, he's out jabbing Callum Smith in that fight,
sorry to interrupt you, that was it really, but but he learned that from the Lara fight, because Lara had a really fast start, buzzed him a little bit, and then the second half of the fight he put loads, so much concentrated pressure on Lara, worked the body, and Lara ran for the second half of the fight. And that's where he lost the fight. Mm. It was close. It was close because Lara had a really good start. But he learned, and no one really saw it at the time, but he did what great fighters can do. He changed the pattern of the fight. Mid-fight.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do that. As a sixth rounder, at the high level, it's very, very impossible. It's almost impossible. Only great fighters do it. Kazak did against Kessler. Some fighters can have done it in the past, of course, as well. I can't give it the names. I can't think of any. But you know, that's a sign of a great fighter. And he did it in that fight. And we forget. And so again, that's another like key moment where he almost lost, but he found a way to change the pattern, to give him the run to the end of the fight, to give him the run. That for me, you know, got him over the line. Just maybe, but just. And now he's learned to pace himself better. He knows what. No, there's no panic. Even the Golovkin fight, he learned from. Like, I thought he lost them both, actually, to be fair. But I thought he clearly lost, not clearly, but he definitely lost the first fight for me. But he learned two things in that first fight against Golovkin. Like, two things that no one's ever done and still can't do against Golovkin. Take his best shot and push him back.
Yeah.
Like, who would even dream of trying to think about doing that?
Yeah.
But he realised in the first fight, you hurt me, but you didn't knock me out, though, and I can walk you down, and I can push you back. And Golovkin boxed well in the second fight, not actually using the jab. Mm. But he realised that my combination punching would be too much if he, you know, with his more heavier single shots. And he learned that from the first one. So in a fight like that, of that magnitude, why would you even risk about changing your tact? No, when you know, like the risk of not boxing your natural, you know, what you can just do best against just a dangerous fighter, and think, I need to walk you down. No, I know I can do that. He has such a supreme confidence in his whole ability to do pretty much anything. All he can't do is fancy Dan. That's all he can't do. He just can't fancy. He can't dance someone like a Ray Leonard or something like that. That's all he can do. Everything else, he's probably the best at.
I just can't see what Plant can do, or what anyone can do really at 168 pounds to beat him. How do you go about beating him? Because Golovkin had to be fair, like you said, Golovkin probably did beat him in the first fight, because it's just someone who can have that, put that sustained pressure on him and try and pin him down and hit him hard and often.
And also be able to take the shots that are coming back. He took that right hand that everybody kind of refers back to.
I don't think Plant can do that. And it'll be the similar situation with Saunders, where he will catch him a bit, but he'll be like, so what? It's almost like he'll wear one because he knows that it's just part of the process of breaking him down.
I think Plant gets knocked out. And because his speed and athleticism masks some of his frailties, because he jumps in, because he's got such fast feet and fast hands. He jumps from way far out and catches you with hooks or right hands. That won't work against Canelo, because when he misses and he dips up to the right.
Tried that at a press conference.
Yeah, it didn't work. Yeah, well done.
It's like a microcosm of the fight, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it kind of was, though, wasn't it?
But he throws and then dips over straight away, but that won't work against Canelo, because Canelo won't cover up and panic, or he'll see it. As soon as you move, he'll see it, and he'll just sit down or take a little lean back, and he's looking to come back, and he'll catch him. He'll catch Plant off his feet. You'll catch him off his feet, and then he'll knock him out like that. I wouldn't be shocked if Plant dives in with a left hook and he catches him with a left hook on an uppercut as he walks, and as he's coming forward, he just continues to go forward and flat on his face like that.
One of them.
Yeah.
You can't get a much more succinct prediction than that.
Yeah, that's
the shot.
I'm not saying it's going to
the trajectory.
Imagine that.
Which way he's going to fall, everything.
I did the other
prediction. It could be early then.
Any point, yeah. But the thing with Canelo, he warms into it, he doesn't panic.
Yeah, that's...
So I think he...
Much like the Saunders fight. There's no panic.
No.
Because he knows, a bit like Kovalev as well, he knows that he's going to get that opening.
And Plant's going to be his most concentrated and the sharpest early. So those jumping in are going to be really... The fast twitch fibre is going to be really working really good for him. But as fatigue sets in, round five, round six, it doesn't look slow to us watching it. But when you're in there in front of him, there's a little tell. Because you've got to generate that movement. So there's a little tell, and he'll see that. I'm judging, I don't know how he thinks, actually. I'm just trying to think, if I was in that place and I had his intelligence, I think that's probably what it is. Mm. You see a little tell. And cause I think about Canelo. I'm got the ability or any intelligence of a Canelo, but I think it's like sparring against someone who can't fight, or go to someone who's not as good as you. And you see everything, every move. They're good at their level, but they're nowhere near your level, whatever your level is. So you see everything they do before they do it, because they do a little tell, a little movement, and you just play with them. So easy, play with them. He does that at the highest level. That's what I feel. He does that at the highest level.
How much of a factor do you think experience is going to be in this fight? Obviously, we've seen Canelo box Floyd Mayweather, Miguel Cotto, Gennady Golovkin twice, Kovalev, Jacobs. It goes on and on and on. Whereas Caleb...
No one mentions Jacobs anymore. That's how good his resume is.
You know
is.
What? If you look, I saw a little clip from that fight, and you know you said you can't do the fancy dance.
He does a little
it's
bit.
Not fancy dance, but some of the defensive...
The defensive moves,
that,
and he's... Yeah, he
you
is.
Don't think about Canelo like that. And to do it against Jacob, you know, often you see the Lomachenko clips come out, and some of it's against, like, Walters and people like that who are not... You're quite crude in their attack, so he's going to see it coming. But someone like Jacobs, really, really good, skilled boxer, and he was chasing shadows. Well,
this what he does with his head.
Yeah, that one.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah. He's, I think I remember he did Austin Trout as well. He had similar success against defensive success.
But he fails with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't he?
And I think that's, I mean, that was a sort of undoing of Saunders, wasn't it?
Someone leaked a video of me sparring in about 2004. I'm not saying that was where he got it from, but it's very,
I think it's a good
very similar. Because at the time then, he was 11. So
was that Barry Jones TV? So he was a subscriber.
He was like 11, so he'd probably only had about 14 pro fights, I don't
know. Yeah, I'm experienced though.
Going back to the experience point is, we've not seen it from Caleb Plant. I mean, he obviously had the used Katagai win, which is a good win, it's a good win. And then since then, Vincent Feigenbutz, Caleb Truax.
Yeah.
You kind of mentioned about the early rounds of the fight. That's a fight where Caleb Plant looked very, very sharp for three or four rounds. And then after that, it was a bit, you know, kind of laboured to a decision win against somebody in Caleb Truax, who I think it's fair to say seen better days, had that outstanding win against James DeGale, but not really an awful lot else. But experience-wise, undisputed title, big pay-per-view. Obviously, we've seen the reported purses that are going for this fight as well. How much of a factor do you think that could be on fight night?
I think Canelo's so far ahead of him, it's not a massive... It's not ideal for him, because I do think that he'll... Maybe there'll be some nervous energy and stuff. And you can't even guard against it. Mm. How can he guard against this stuff? I think you saw a little bit of how it manifested in that press conference and how he's acting, because he is charged up. And the thing is, the stuff that he's been through outside the ring, none of this phases him, I'm sure. None of it really phases him. But the experience on that massive occasion, it can only be... It's all in Canelo's favour. And it's a bit like when Canelo boxed Mayweather. Mayweather was so used to all of that. He was so much better in the end, it wasn't really a factor because he was always going to beat him. But he's so much more used to that occasion than Canelo was, that it's just another big dollop of how I'm going to win this and how you've really got no chance in this.
There's almost no bigger occasion than a Canelo fight anymore. Almost.
Oh, it is. It
you know what I mean?
But not for Canelo.
When Canelo, that's what I mean, there's no, like, every fight's so big for him that there's no one, he can't experience no more. No. Like, when he boxed Mosley, that was his last fight as an undercard fighter. So he becomes a main guy on pay-per-view. So that's a huge experience for him. But then when he boxes Mayweather a year later, that's another thing. It's different again, isn't it? Obviously, because you're going on, you're not just being at the top of the bill. You're on a different stratosphere. Like when Mayweather boxed De La Hoya, he coped with it because Mayweather's an all-time great. But no, he went on a different level. But again, and once you're up there, then there's nowhere else to go. You're at the top. There's no more bigger. You can do bigger crowds, but the occasion is as big as it gets worldwide. And for Canelo, no, that's what it is. You know he's a superstar because the Hispanic market has always been the biggest pay-per-view market in the States. So it goes on two holidays, doesn't it? It goes on the one in May, San Mayo, and the one in September. The second week of September, I think it is.
Yeah,
he's so big, they don't have to worry about the holidays because everyone's going to flood the Vegas anyway in November. Like, you know what I mean? Because he's got this Canelo. He's like all-time great Mexicans. Like, I don't like to talk about things like that, like all-time great pound for pound list and all that crap. But like, he's as big as it gets ever. I'm not saying he's not saying the best, but he's as big as it gets ever.
And it seems like he's starting to really relish kind of the. I mean, now, obviously, he's spoken English for years, but obviously decided not to for whatever reason. He's now kind of being marketed. And I think this is something that Matchroom did really well with him during the period of time that they worked together, is they gave him the big grand entrances and we start to see a little bit more of Canelo's personality. And I feel like he's really relishing the moment that he's in his career now, knowing that he's kind of at the peak of his powers in the ring and outside of the ring. I think he's starting to really live that superstar life, even though he has been a superstar for a number of years.
I'd love to. He's one of these guys I wish I spoke his language, because the interview would be, he speaks a bit of English, broken English, and the interviews are okay, but you know, they are what they are. And the same with when you do it for a translator, even worse. I used to think the same about like Povetkin. It'd be so good to just be able to just sit him down and have an interview him properly. Mm. And with Canelo, like the whole pyjama thing, didn't see that coming. And it's like, he must be, look at his background, all the brothers and all, he must have some unbelievable stories to tell. But he's always been this sort of sullen, withdrawn sort of half-smile guy, particularly when I was covering like the Golovkin fights and that. You never really got much out of him. And you thought, oh, it's because he's so cold. And I don't think he is.
No, he's not.
I bet he's a funny fella and he's got wearing his pyjamas about all the time. I think, but you're right, he's grown into that.
Yeah, yeah.
He's grown into that.
He did a really good interview with Graham Bensinger. I don't know if you'd have seen it.
Is it in English?
Yeah. And they do a tour of his mansion and then they speak to him as well. And they discuss, you know, he's doing like Canelo Energy and stuff like that. So he's starting his own like petrol, I think it's like his own gas stations and stuff like that.
He wants to do it. He wants to do electric cars, mate. I'll tell him.
That's it. Yeah, electric. I think he's moving to something like that. But anyway, go and watch the Graham Bensinger interviews with Canelo, and you just start to see like that side of him come out. There's a great quote where they ask him about the Chavez Jr. fight, and Bensinger, who I don't think is the biggest hardcore boxing fan, go and said, "Oh, you know, what was it like for you to box Chavez Jr.?" And Canelo went, easy work for me. and that was it. And then just those little pockets, which I don't think we saw of him.
I didn't realise he was Scouse.
Oh, cheers, mate. Over him, with my Scouse accent's awful. But anyway, I don't think we saw those kind of little pockets from him when he was at Golden Boy. And obviously, when he moved from there, it was quite a acrimonious departure. And he was, you know, he wasn't shy about telling people that he wasn't very happy there. But I feel like he's very much settled into life as pound for pound number one, biggest name in boxing. And he's kind of embracing everything that's come his way. For Caleb Plant, that Caleb Truex fight was 30th of January, because I've just checked my phone, 2021. Since then, we've seen Canelo box Avni Yildirim. We've seen him box Billy Joe Saunders. Caleb Plant, by his own admission, decided to wait and weighed it out, knowing that Canelo would eventually come for that final piece of the jigsaw. Mistake up, or?
No, well, financially, it's the best thing he ever did in his life. That's the truth, because you know, you have to realise that's a chance of that you might lose your world title and lose before him.
Could he not have got like an Anthony Durrell was the fight that they tried to make?
Durrell might beat him. He wouldn't, but you know, I don't think so. I don't think he's good enough, that you might think it. I don't think he's good enough to be a guaranteed, you know, a guarantee against anyone who's good. If he has to fight people who are good. So you know, you think I'd fancy him massively against Durrell, but you just, you know, it wouldn't be like that an all-time world shocker that he got if he got beat by him. So you know, he did the financially. You have to wait. If that fight, the biggest fight, the biggest fight in the world. Forget about financially, which is all about that, and that's understandably because he goes home now. He never fights again. He's an uber rich man for the rest of his life. But to want to test yourself against the very very best, to get the opportunity to do that. For anyone, no, it's worth it. That one time. Because whatever happens in the rest of your life, you go, I boxed him. Oh, did you? How'd you get on? I got hammered, but I boxed him. But I got in there with him. You know, and it's true, isn't it? It's true. I'm proud. I keep talking about myself. I got more pride about my loss than I have all my wins. Because I went against a guy who was too good for me, and I had to go. And I got battered, but it doesn't matter. I had to go, and I tested myself. And that's what you want to do. In, as much as you want to make a living and all that crap, deep down, you're still the kid who just loved it for the sport. No, it becomes the money ruins it for you. Actually, to be honest, I mean, I never earned the mega money, so I don't know what it's like for them guys. But you know, it's still in many ways the money sours it, the sport, for the boxer itself. Even if he's earning loads of it, because it makes it more difficult to the love you had for it. It clouds it. But sometimes you get a big fight like that. That fight you look back to all your life, and you go, I did that. Like how all Kazag wanted to do, he boxed Roy Jones. He should have boxed, I go off on a tangent, I know. He should have boxed Kelly Pavlik. He would have beat Kelly Pavlik and then boxed Roy Jones then back in the Millennium Stadium and then three times as much in that fight and another 6 million or whatever they boxed Pavlik and earned an extra 15 million quid or whatever it would have been and finished still undefeated. But he wanted to box in Madison Square Garden. Cause for the bucket list. Because he wasn't Joe Kazag, no, can I make as much money as I can? He was Joe Calzaghe, the 16-year-old Joe Calzaghe, or the 15-year-old who's winning British schoolboy titles, who dreamed of these, you're in a place you never thought you'd be. And that's the same for Plant. As much as it's about the money, it's also, well, I don't want to risk anything. I can fight the best fighter on the planet here now. And what if I beat him? Because again, I keep saying about boxers, the eternal dreamers, you have to be to do it in many ways. What if I beat him? And that's it. And he'll go in really thinking he can win. They'll have a plan, and he'll think my speed, my movement, my erraticness, the way I jump into attacks will be Canelo's flat-footed. He's not flat-footed, but people think he's flat-footed, but he's not. He's just grounded. And they'll go, he's flat-footed, I can jump in, I can spin around him, he won't know where I am. He had trouble with Lara back in, 1732. And it'll be all that sort of stuff. And you'll draw on all these things to give you that confidence. So he'll be flying, but ultimately, he's taking this fight for the money, but also for that kid who turned, before he turned pro as an amateur, who dreamed of being a great fighter. Or not, I just made that up, but I think that sounded good.
Playing devil's advocate, I know you've said that you heavily favour Canelo, I think we all do. How does Caleb Plant go about beating Canelo? What's his best chance of things? We've mentioned about the movement. I mean, he's going to have to pitch the perfect game and hope that he still gets the decision anyway. How do you see a Caleb Plant win looking if
the thing is, I don't think he hits hard enough. I don't think he's got that power to do what... I think the only person who beats Canelo now and what will happen is if he does go up, he will lose to Beterbiev, for instance, because someone who can hit him regularly hard will be enough to wear him down. I don't think Caleb Plant can wear him down in any way, and I don't see him chinning him with a shot from the gods, because I think the only way you can beat him is what Golovkin did, is put pressure on him, but at the same time have a good enough chin that your energy's not going down like this, and you're not thinking, I can't take many more of these, because I think that's what's going to happen. So unless he just, it's the same as anything, try and get, start very fast and try and, if he starts cold or something like that, hope that Canelo has got has taken his eye off the ball in some way, but this is not Sugar Ray Robinson against Randy Turpin, where he's on a world tour and he's got, it's just another fight. This is for the last belt, the last piece of the jigsaw, which has been going on about for ages. It's not like he's going to be lacking motivation or caught cold or not concentrated. He's been in the gym for however long. This is the moment for him. I can't see a way he beats him. He ain't winning on points. And is he going to chin him? Probably not.
I think Plant might be able to punch, but the problem is he doesn't punch because
he's always moving.
He's already thinking about moving it away before. I watched him and thought, I used to do that. He's like, you're always thinking about the other move while you're throwing that punch. So you're moving away anyway. So as you're touching them, you're off. And that's sort of his strength, because he's had the hit then clean and he can move off at different angles. So he hasn't got the power. That's what it looks like. And even if he did have the power, he doesn't plant his feet to produce the power. So you have to do loads of feints and draw the lead of Canelo, which is a very simple thing to do. That way, and try and frustrate him, feint, frustrate him, and then pick him off and try and sneak a win, which is not going to happen. Or you faint, and what he does plant, you throw in clusters and you smother Canelo's work. If you can do that, you smother Canelo's work, you be dirty when you get in close, you grab him. Again, though, there's nothing Canelo hasn't seen. He's physically massively strong, even though he's always the smallest guy in the ring. He always feels like he's the biggest guy. Even against Kovalev, he looked like the bigger guy. Yeah. It's a weird thing. His presence is big. Mm. And so, yeah, I think the only way that he can possibly win, and he won't, is doing that. Punches in bunches, and then when you get close, you fluster him with all little pitty-patter shots, and when you get close, you spin right around the tiger, so you're behind him, push him, get away. Every time you start throwing, it's not a movement to throw again, it's a movement to escape. And then let and keep him turning, looking for you, and frustrate him, and try and mess with the wrong with him that way. I think that would be his only option. It won't work.
For 12 rounds,
it won't work. Yeah. It won't work. It might not work one time, actually, but I think I can't see any other way.
You mentioned about him moving up to 175 pounds. Of course, he already has won a world title against Sergei Kovalev.
Could box Craig Richards.
Could box Craig Richards. There we go.
You either love Craig or hate Craig.
I'm just saying that he doesn't. I've never heard him say it. That's the one name he doesn't mention. He doesn't fancy. Craig Richards.
Canelo Craig Richards at Selhurst Park. There we go. Get to do a stadium over here in the UK. If it's not 175. Do you see anyone at 168 potentially causing him any problems? Obviously, people talk about David Benavidez, Jamal Charlo potentially moving up from 160. I think Andrade is going to get that fight by the looks of things, regardless of what happens. Can you see anybody at 168, or does it have to? Is it only going to be size that beats him?
Or age and being on the sport too long?
Benavidez, there is young. So, yeah, that could be that.
I don't see how long Canelo lasts in the sport, to be honest, because what are you in if how much money
he's gonna run out of challenges, surely. Who is he gonna box?
I know he loves it and it's his life, and what it looks like with him, he's one of those, what makes great fighters great as well is that most of them is he trains diligently, lives the life. You know, you've been slagging Gassi, young Gassi off, haven't you? Well, yeah. Why ain't he in the gym? I'm in the gym all the time. Why ain't he in the gym? Because he know it. No, if I'm in the gym, he should be in the gym. You know, one of those, isn't he? He's like a Ronaldo.
That type. Was great to see, by the way. Just to kind of deviate from that. I really enjoyed that.
He's like a Ronaldo in football. You know, like, well, you know, lead by example. I'm the best player on the planet, or one or two of them, because I'm there every all the time. I'm in the gym. I'm working. I'm on the field, and it's the same with him. I'm in the gym. I'm training. I'm on the pads. I'm working. I'm trying to evolve. Trying to get better, you know, all the time. Where are you? You want to be the next superstar, but where are you? And he's right. To be fair, I'm not saying Garcia can't do that. I can't see that either. But I'm not saying he can't do that. But he's saying, if you want to be me, this is what you have to do. He's showing you the formula, and like, many people would love to be training with Canelo. That inspiration. You say success breeds success. You've done it. You know, once you get at the Calzaghe gym, look at the Calzaghe gym. I mean, where a little place in Wales, and cleverly, you know, Gavin Rees, you know, they're all from there. Just cause, and as much as Enzo Calzaghe was a good trainer, it was Joe. You learn off the fighters above you. That's the truth. You watch them, you learn, you pick things up, and you just see how they conduct themselves when they're training, the intensity of it all. So, like, you know, it's crazy. But I just think age. You know, you can't maintain that level of excellence forever. And he's maintained it for way too long already. So, you know, you look at fighters' longevity of excellence. So I'm an 80s product, you know, so I love it. I mean, I was born in the 70s, but I'm an 80s. You know, so the boxers in the 80s were the best ever, in my mind. But Ray Leonard's span of brilliance was that big.
Yeah.
He was fantastic. He's my favourite fighter of all time. But, you know, and if he was boxing today, everyone would be running away, hiding. But, like, he was that big. It was that long. You know, there was a few... Durand had a longer reign, of course. But a longer career. But his reigns were erratic as well. Yeah, yeah. But Canelo just spanned... And that's because it's easier to win titles and keep them, of course. But he's boxed pretty much the best fighters around his weight at his time, to be fair to him. Again, the fact that we never, you're the first guy, I've spoken about Canelo about six times in the last 2 months, and you're the first person, you probably made a mistake because you've got no knowledge, to mention Daniel Jacobs. Like, Daniel Jacobs is a really good fighter, gets lost in all those names that he's had. It's crazy.
Yeah, I agree about the age thing. It'll be age or size that does him. And Benavidez, very young, very strong and powerful.
But very green.
He's very green, so we don't know. He's totally unproven.
And he had
but if he develops as he develops, I don't see Charlo. I can't see Charlo beating him.
Pants unproven, so maybe he's the one then.
Yeah, but
I feel
because Benavidez has that power and that he's aggressive, and I just, but he's totally unproven. Plant is more proven than him. I think he will go up again. I think he'll go searching up there, and maybe he'll beat Beterbiev. I mean. Who knows?
He could be.
Beterbiev, just the way that Beterbiev boxes is, you know, he can.
He's not hard to find, Beterbiev.
No.
Maybe
he'll keep going up. Maybe he'll keep going up.
See Canelo at Bridgeway or Canelo. He wouldn't like you.
Look, when Andy Ruiz.
He beat Oscar Rivas tomorrow, wouldn't he?
Do you want to watch Canelo Andy Ruiz Jr.? Imagine. World champion.
Imagine how big that fight would be.
Can you imagine
in Mexico? It'd be unbelievable. Cinco de Mayo 2023.
Yeah. Yeah,
Canelo wider than he is sort of just walking, and Andy Ruiz, to be fair.
But he creates history. He'd be the first super middleweight to have all the belts at the same time. No, that's a tick. I'm pretty sure that's true, isn't it?
In the four belt,
and Joe had them all, but he had to relinquish one, didn't he? The IBF, I think, when he beat Kessler. So, you know, he creates another bit of history. No, how long can you keep going? How much money can you accumulate? Until you think,
but again, it's kind of what you've said. It may just not be about that for him. I think that does drive him. Yeah. I think he'd said to Eddie already, had made comment about him wanting to go up and become undisputed at light heavyweight after being undisputed at 168 pounds. And you kind of wouldn't put it past him because I don't think 175 is as strong as it was a few years ago when you had Adonis Stevenson, Barry Jack, obviously a fresher version of Beterbiev, Kovalev still there, and you know, fresh. And I feel like now, I feel Bivol's gone off the boil a little bit. Obviously taken out of him by Craig Richards in his last fight, of course.
I come back from that.
And
he's been spidered. He's been spidered. I mean, Canelo could get spidered.
He could. Let's take the fight first.
Maybe get injured. You know, like Canelo could get an injury. He's been doing it since he was, what, one or something?
You'd imagine there's some wear and tear. I think exactly. He had an elbow injury, I think, at one point.
A world tour or something like that. Yeah. Something, it'd be one of those. So they got to be thinking, though, especially Eddie Hearn, they'd be thinking out of the box, what can we do with him? You know, if he goes back with him, it seems to be like a decent little partnership. I know they're on another channel for this fight. But I'm afraid they're going to get too much gimmicks around him. Like, I didn't like the ring walk and all that he had. I didn't like it. I loved his the mariachi band, simple. I was getting the ring, short, and getting the ring, fight. All that other stuff, like, for me,
you didn't like Jay Balvin?
I don't know what that is. I'm not criticizing that. They're good for them. But what I mean is, that for me, I like that. He just, he was very like, this is who I am. I'm no nonsense. I'm just going to come in here, do my job, batter you. And go home.
But he loves a bit of that, by all accounts. Mm. Canelo, he loves a bit of the superstardom.
He does. I know he does. Listen, you do whatever makes him happy. You haven't got to consult with me. but what I'm saying is, like, be careful not to do too much gimmicks around him. He doesn't need it. Like, for the sports having all that too much at the minute, I feel. But like him with that, they start doing a world tour with him now, and he'll fight the best fight from every country.
Would you like to see a Gennady Golovkin trilogy bout?
It's a guilty pleasure, isn't it? I think I would.
I think I kind of would as well. Like,
the problem is, you know the winner this time.
You know what happens.
Without any controversy, he beats Golovkin now. Someone said the other day, I can't remember when I heard it, that Golovkin's not as like lost a step or something like that. I haven't seen that, really.
I thought he'd actually looked really good against Zeremita, which was obviously, again, like the level of opponent is not the same, but
being
bad, I feel like he looked...
name, is he? That's all. Well, he's a name. He's a horrible name to pronounce.
But I felt like Golovkin actually looked a lot fresher. I felt like there was a period of time where he did look like he'd slowed down. And obviously, the obvious fight is the Derevianchenko fight.
But he has slowed down, though.
But I felt like he looked physically very good against Zeremita in his last fight. And I'd be interested to see how he looks against Roberto Morata at the end of the year when they fight.
That's a style suit of him, though, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that's always been a good fight for him. I feel like it's probably now the last time he can really do it. And it's a big fight out there. It's a big fight in Japan. Obviously, Golovkin has Korean heritage. And I think that's going to be... I think that's going to be a better performing fight outside the ring than it's going to be in the ring, certainly for Morata. I think Golovkin will win that and look good. And yeah, I wouldn't mind it. 168, I mean, again, it would all be massively in Canelo's favour, being able to drag him up.
They're the dance partners. They'll always be a good fight to watch. Yeah. That's because the way they are. Because whatever happens, even though one might box more than he did the last time or whatever, but ultimately, you'll see both of them taking big shots and they're both on a rally. They're a perfect match, them two. Mm. They're a perfect match. It's a shame they weren't closer to ages, because they could have had like a five-fight thing. It would have been just unbelievable. Like,
really. Even the fights that we got were great, and I think people kind of...
For both of them, they're probably the best moments of my outside the boxing career. Broadcasting, I guess you call it. Yeah. Career was them two fights.
Mm. Imagine we would have got the first fight 2 years beforehand. Yeah. Which is when I think the WBC ordered it, didn't they? They put a 30-day negotiation on the belt, and Canelo was like, "All right, well, fuck the belt. have your belt." Riddick bowed them. Okay, I guess the final thing on Canelo Plant is to ask for a prediction. Deck, we're going to start with you. We're not going to ask you to be as specific as Barry Jones is.
If you can.
Yeah, I would think that it would be similar to Saunders' fight. That it'll catch up with him. I reckon he'll stop in the last, 9-12, the championship rounds. And I think he'll have to take some stick, Plant. And he'll give everything. He won't go down without a fight. He'll just, it won't be any, no shame in losing to a generational fighter. I think he'll get stopped 9 or 10, something like that.
Yeah, 8 to 10, something like that, I think so. I think Canelo doesn't rush anything, does he?
No.
But I wouldn't be shocked if he goes anywhere. Like, to be honest, we don't know how tough Plant is. That's the problem. He might be extremely tough and be able to dog it out. I don't know, but I think you have to judge what you've seen, and I just think whatever he does, Canelo will have an answer for, and the answer won't be very nice. That's the truth.
I think he'll have to absorb too much that his feet is going to slow down.
Yeah,
and he ain't going to be used to having his feet slow down like that, and then he's a sitting duck.
You'll catch him coming in. You'll catch him because when you'll jump, he takes risks. But like I say, he gets away with it because he got fast feet and fast hands. But as you slow down, and against a guy who has really good vision, and by the way, Canelo's a fantastic counterpuncher, like superb counterpuncher.
Big heavy shots.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
big heavy. Some fighters will sting you with a counter punch, yeah. But he's real trying to take your head.
And I think that's why I was joking about that. But I think you wouldn't be shocked if he jumps in and gets caught and just carries on going forward, yeah. Like, because he's out. And I think that might be the case.
Would you be surprised if it goes the distance?
Again, we don't know how tough Plant is, and it depends if he can still move when he's knackered. Basically, he can still and can stay out of trouble. But and yes. Not get pinned, but yeah, it would be, yeah.
Yeah, so I feel like we saw some of the answers, or certainly some of the signs of that in the Truax fight. I felt like in the after four rounds, we really slowed down.
Yeah, but
and he was having those first four rounds, he's completely his own way.
Yeah,
Caleb Truax wasn't forcing him to do anything. He was boxing at his own pace, all very one-sided. And then after four or five rounds, the feet stopped going anywhere, and it became a lot of arm punches, and we didn't see the athleticism. We didn't see him hopping in and out with the feet and showing his fast hands. And I feel like if he was in there against Canelo Alvarez and boxing that way, then I would be very surprised if he goes the distance.
I think you say answers in that. I think we saw some answers a bit in Canelo against Saunders.
Yep.
In that I fancied Saunders to stay out of trouble for the fight and get beaten widely on the card. So he didn't. He couldn't. Because at some point, you can't just run about the old fight, and that's not really Plant anyway. And then he will end up absorbing too much and his cheek will go or something. You know, it doesn't matter how much heart he's got, I think he's gonna get hurt at some point.
And I think we saw in the Billy Joe Saunders fight, again, Canelo starting the fight more aggressively. He came out and he was digging them left.
Yeah, but he was annoyed, wasn't he? He's annoyed again.
But he's gonna be pissed off for this fight as well. And he's already kind of openly said, like, I'm gonna knock this guy out in inside eight rounds, or I think whatever he said at the press conference while Caleb Plant was standing there.
Well, maybe I'll change my prediction to that then.
There we go, at 7-3.
If he has no respect for your power.
Yeah, then you're in real trouble.
He steps on you anyway. But if he has no respect for your power.
If he's going to walk down Gennady Golovkin, he's going to walk you down.
Yeah. but I think he'll do it bluntly. Like, it'd be lack of finesse.
Yeah, I feel like we saw some of that in the early rounds of the Saunders fight, which is why Saunders was able to have some success and why the movement was some more of a factor, because it was less nuanced, it was less subtle from Canelo, and it was very much, right, I'm going to come in, I'm going to stick this left hook in your body, you're not going to like it. And that's kind of where the fight ended up, which is why, again, while you were watching it, while Billy Joe Saunders was having some success, never did you think, okay, he could win this, or he might be in with a shot of winning the fight. The writing was on the wall, and I feel like it is for this as well.
Would you be surprised?
If it goes the distance, yeah. I think style-wise, it's a really good fight for Canelo. I think the first three or four rounds, I do expect Plant to be sharp, but I feel like any kind of hope of him going the distance would have been aided by Canelo not being pissed off
and trying.
And I feel like it would have had to take Canelo to have a two or three rounds to start to just kind of put the pressure on with the feet and the head movement, and then maybe Plant survives 9, 10, 11, but I don't feel...
It's going to be on him, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think against Canelo, you tend to think straight away, an athletic fighter has more chance. Like, we thought Billy, you know, because he's a great mover, and even Plant because he's athletic. But I think you a more structured fighter as a best. You tend to think not because...
Like Golovkin.
I think a more structured fighter. No, I think you still have to have fast feet. And certainly, like, I love the word pivot. Can I say pivot? I said if
you love a pivot. That's a Barry Jones bingo.
That is, sick pivot, and we won't go into the details of the rest of Barry.
but you know, I think that I think you have to have, like, be quite structured with your work and straight down the line with him, I think, to be honest. Because, you know, he likes to dip and throw uppercuts, and he'll work off the line there. But if you keep your shape well, and you're there to block stuff. But to have the confidence, you have to be like a you have to have the chin of a Golovkin to be confident. Like, he has the chin and the confidence to take that shot just in case it doesn't work. And I think other people,
Callum Smith was like that with structure wise, and he just couldn't handle it, could he?
Well, what happens is, you're afraid. I know what it's like when you get hurt, or when you win with a puncher who just misses you. It takes away your confidence to throw a shot. Naz was a master of it. He'd make you miss and make you pay really early with a really hard shot. And then...
You don't want to throw another jab.
Yeah.
You're pulling the pants for the rest of the fight. You want to, and what do they do then? They actually slow you down because you're thinking, I got to throw. Because you're not doing that enough. And you also think, if I make a mistake, I'm getting hurt. You don't care about getting hurt. If I'm going to get caught, okay? Yeah. And you're like, and then you'll go, and then you'll go like this. You'll crawl at the shot.
Joshua,
it slows you down.
There's a bit of that there.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And you make so many mistakes, and then you make mistakes, and they look fast than they actually are, because they just slows you right down to a snail's pace. They take away your strengths. But make you miss, make you pay, sort of scenario. But make you miss, make you pay. There's a difference in the way they do it. So Canelo, every shot with Canelo is vicious. Even the jab, it's like he steps behind it and it's bam, turns that shoulder, and it's just like a. I know when you say when you have power, make him feel it early, like we said about Joshua.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you got to try and make Usyk feel that weight early. Well, that's what Canelo does. Even if he's not winning the fourth round, or he's not doing a lot. Every shot, you go, ooh, don't want to feel that one again. Subconsciously, you're not actually thinking that'd be that one nice, and then you're moving over this way, and then you go crack with the right. Oh, sorry, with the right, crack with the right hand on the arm, and you go, "Ooh, I don't like that." And then so all of a sudden, then whether it's his feet or his hat or the punches, he's putting you where he wants you in the ring, and you're panicking, and with the panic, you're breathing. I say the same thing all the time, but it's true. The panic, you're breathing, it tires you out. And then we might not see it watching at home. We might not see Billy Joe tiring, or we might not see Golovkin tiring, or anyone else tiring. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But what you do, but he feels it, because again, like I said earlier on, the little tells. Because when you tight, when you throw punches from up the guillotine and your jab comes straight out, and it's a solid jab. There's no telling it. It comes right from my eye line, right down straight. As I get tired, to get the kind of fast twitch fibers to generate a bit of speed, you've got to do a little movement so your arm drops a bit. Now you would notice that. We don't notice that at home watching. It's, that's a good jab. But he's seen you go poof like that.
Yeah.
And that's enough for him to go bam, bam, or slip, whap. And there's little details like that, that great fighters with a great vision that don't panic under any sort of pressure, any shots, they're comfortable because they've got a great chin and composure, or they're in the fire frame, you know, all these punches coming at them, getting caught now and again, they don't worry, they're still watching you all the time, waiting for that mistake.
And he'll get one.
Yeah, just like I never used to do. I know it's been done to me, so that's why I know.
Yeah.
Okay, right, to wrap things up, going right back to the start, we were looking at this past weekend, somebody I want to talk about, unbeaten welterweight star, making his ascent. So, and Jaron Ennis Boots returned to the ring with another spectacular performance, a first round knockout against Thomas Delorme. Barry, I know you haven't watched it, so we won't come to you first. Deck, Jaron Ennis seems to be the goods at 147 pounds, the heir apparent.
He's the future, isn't he? He's not even the future anymore. He's here. He's well and truly here. It's funny because I was thinking about the division, and I said this before, and I don't want to be negative about it, but like Crawford Porter doesn't do a lot for me as a fight. A lot of people falling over themselves to praise it. It's not for me.
That's a great fight.
I think I know it's a good fight, but I think I know what happens in it. But I would, someone like Ennis, I want to see him against Crawford. I want to see him against Spence.
I'd love to see him against Spence.
And Ortiz is around as well. Virgil Ortiz, you know, he's there as well. But I think Ennis, I think he is, if not already, like we talk about pound for pound. Pound for pound is based, it's rubbish anyway, but it's based on achievement and body of work, whatever else. In terms of ability, I think Ennis is, he's the business.
I tell you what's the future fight in that weight division? Is him and Virgil Ortiz.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
that's a fight.
I mean, Delorme, decent opponent. He vaporised, the first punch looked a bit behind the heady. You know, it was, but the way he set it up was nice. He got caught a couple of times himself. I think he just got it all. I don't know what, I haven't seen a lot of him in terms of his personality and stuff like that. And by this point, what is he, something like 24-0 or something?
Yeah.
Oh, no, he's 28-0, 26 knockouts.
Yeah, he's right up there already. You know, he's not a prospect anymore.
But the good thing, I like that. Cause
that's lovely, isn't
that's
it?
That's an old-fashioned apprenticeship, isn't it, really? Yeah. Like,
and that's probably why he's so good and looks so complete. He looks complete.
He beat the kid. The kid boxed Friday, boxed Tursun Baykalukmet in the York Hall. Who knocked him out?
A brew.
So that was it. No, like Kalukma was winning the fight Friday night and boxing really well, but A brew was always in it. You could see dangerous, and he caught him with a great shot. He caught Kalukma with a great shot, and he was gone. He got up too early and he battered him. And you just think, you look back at, I watched the Ennis fight before that to do my bit of research, and I'd seen it at the time, but I watched it back again, and I thought this kid's good. He looks dangerous, this kid, but. Like Ennis is just like
the
shot, the uppercut that he rolled and hit him with that. Yeah, what, like Jamal Charlo? Do you remember when Jamal Charlo hit Julian hands, Williams with
the right uppercut? He blocked it with that and then threw with the same hand. He's He's seriously good.
Once he sees a gap, reactions to what you do, once you make a mistake, once you do something, he's so fast to get on you with it. Like, it's just, he's lovely.
He's going to be one of those fighters. Similar to Errol Spence, when Errol Spence had to come over and box Cal Brook, he's going to have to work himself into a man.
Yeah, who wants
position.
To fight him?
Nobody's going to want to box him. Yeah. And also, he's boxing on Showtime cards, but he's not a PBC fighter.
Is he not?
No. So he's not going to be offered up these PBC guys to smash to pieces on his way up. So
see, that's why I'm a bit hesitant with it, because we've seen this at welterweight. I don't want to get too excited, because we said the same about Spence, certainly about Crawford when he's coming up, and then nothing happens. And it's just the way we do it. We go, he's the guy.
Crawford's welterweight reign's been...
Exactly. But, I mean, hopefully it's not the same for him and Ortiz. It's always the best division, isn't it?
So,
he's funny. You've got to follow him on Twitter. He doesn't really tweet much. Every now and again, he tweets the same thing, and it's 12 rounds of sparring with three different guys, full stop, feeling good. Like that. Every time. It's my favourite Twitter account. Every time I do it, I drink my drink every time I see him tweet that. He's the one, though, isn't he? He's the one.
He looks very, very good.
Yeah.
I think, again, for the American fight, though, they want to see his personality. Well, that's the problem. Who promotes him then? Who's he with?
So he had a promotional issue. I can't remember who he was with, but he's now out of that, and he's boxing on Showtime cards. But I think they're trying to get something done.
I was going to say, why wouldn't you sign him up? You'd grab him, wouldn't you?
You'd think so. But again, like, who's going to want to fight him? Yeah. even if he signed a PBC.
That's true, he's going to have to get a man. Well,
money, yeah, exactly.
Money, though, isn't it? Why don't DAZN grab him? Yeah. Like, there's the future of DAZN in the US.
Well, then there's a problem. Don't do that, because then we won't see him against anyone.
Well, yeah, see him against Conor Benn.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Why don't you grab hold of him? Yeah. Because people are fighting if there's money involved. And you build up, you know.
He's gonna, for the money to really be there for him, though, he's going to have to get a fight. He's going to have to work himself into a mandatory position and beat somebody really good. And even then, if he works himself into a mandatory position, and you've got people like Crawford and Spence at the end of their careers looking for the biggest fights for the lowest risk, or certainly those career-defining fights. If you're a 34-year-old Crawford by the time that fight comes around, are you going to want to fight him? Probably not.
Yeah, I've no doubt he's going to be pound for pound number one.
There we go.
I think he's the talk about generational talent. He's the next one. Yeah, he's the next one. Canelo's now. He's the next one.
Okay. Well, we have to end it there, because Johnny Fisher keeps ringing me because he's outside. I don't want to let him down. Although he's apologised to me for being early, because that's the type of salt of the earth character that he is. But thank you, as always, for tuning in to episode 26 of the Boxing Social Podcast with myself, Barry Jones, and Dec Taylor. We'll see you next time.